Welcome back. You're here with Dave and Faisal on 770 CHQR and More Than Money. We're joined, obviously, by Philip Peterson. Philip is the Chief Investment Strategist of Manulife Investments. And we spent the last segment really talking about 2019, how it shaped up, and how it was surprising.
Yeah. Okay?
Philip, I want to start this segment with a look forward. Okay. And I'm gonna give you some context to the Investment Management Committee meeting that Faisal and I and our team just concluded on our quarterly reviews. But here's the bookends. On the most pessimistic member on our investment management committee, they see a 75% chance probability of a U.S. recession in 2020. On the most optimistic side, okay, we have one of the members who says this is just globally a mid-cycle slowdown, a mid-cycle correction, and that the stimulus, we've had 35 global central banks providing stimulus to the system, that we're going to reaccelerate the economic growth, the global economic growth. Those are pretty wide bookends. Where are we?
I would say we're closer to the mid-cycle slowdown, if I had to lean one way or the other. And the reason for that being is we go through a number of different indicators that have been typical preconditions of a recession in the past. And I'm pleased to say that really none of them are flashing red right now. So it's very difficult in my mind to make the case that we are headed towards a recession. There's always a probability that something could pop up that we don't anticipate. But if we look at numerous preconditions of a recession in the past, really none of them exist today. And in the more important ones you touched on there in terms of central bank easing, how are the credit markets? Right, because if credit seizes up, you're absolutely headed towards a recession. Yep. We don't see that at all. In fact, you know, we would argue that the Fed didn't need to cut rates at all over the last three sessions because credit, if you look at a number of different indices that measure credit in the United States, they are all pretty favorable. So the banks are okay. The banks are healthy. Then you look at the consumer in the United States, and you know, we would argue globally, the consumer, but in the United States in particular, very healthy. So it's difficult to make the case that it would be a credit or consumer-led recession in the United States. Now, could we see a manufacturing recession, which is a small subset of the U.S. economy, but important to the stock market? Yes. You know, we can argue that we can see that, but would that lead to an outright bear market and therefore a crash in the markets? Again, you know, markets aren't overvalued. We do see flat earnings growth over the coming 12-month time frame. It doesn't suggest that we would see anything deeper than a normal correction. But over the course of the next 12 months, we don't think that that justifies, to Faisal, your question before the break, justifies selling your equities outright into this environment. It does recognize the fact that we probably want to dial back our risk. If we think you're going to get a below-average return out of equities, positive but below average over the course of the next 12 months, well, that comes with average or maybe slightly above average risk. It's not worth it. So dial equity exposure back, shift that to fixed income where the return profile we think over the next 12 months is going to be pretty similar, and start to perhaps protect yourself a little bit to the downside.
Okay, so let's start talking about how you position your portfolio today. We have had many conversations together about the positioning of the portfolio, how you've been taking it down from equities and so forth. Start off by saying to you, to our listeners and viewers, what's considered to be a balanced portfolio, so they have an idea of what that looks like. And then what have you done in the last two quarters, so September and let's go back to June, on what you've changed and why you made those changes in light of what was been discussed so far?
Certainly. So let's start with the benchmark. The benchmark is a 60-40 portfolio. That's 60% equity, 40% fixed income. Okay. Historically, this has provided investors with the best risk-adjusted return, meaning you know you're getting paid per unit of risk. Now, what we've done over the course of the year, I'll say, is reduce our overall equity weight. A little over a year ago, it stood at about 70%. Today, it's 50%. So in June, that was the last time that we actually made a change in our model portfolio. We took our equity weight down from 60% to 50. We kept it that way in September, really didn't make any change in September. And so we're sitting at 50% equity, 50% fixed income. So underweight relative to a 60-40 benchmark by 10%. And so that just is suggesting that we think, look, the upside in fixed income and equities is going to be, you know, similar over the course of the next 12 months, and our downside should be less than what we would see out of a 60-40 portfolio.
So the beautiful thing about investing, Dave, is we can go anywhere in the world.
Right.
Now, if you have 50% of your money in equities, Philip, walk me through the geographical locations of where you're allocating that money.
Certainly. So our overweight would be to international, and that's 20% of that 50 would be to international equities. This would include Europe. This would include Japan. This would include developed markets in Asia. And the reason being is that if we think that we're going to see a recovery, so the risk to the upside is that we do get a trade deal. Who benefits most in a trade deal based on valuation and earnings growth? That would be the international markets. That would be Asia, companies or and countries tied to Asia. So who has greater exposure to China in particular? Germany, Europe, much more so than we would see in the United States, where the U.S. market, again, isn't expensive, but as far as valuation is concerned, it is trading at a higher level than what we're seeing in other areas of the world, Europe, Japan in particular. And so we think that the international markets have more leverage to the upside and have already seen a good, healthy part of the downside, where profit margins have been compressed, earnings have fallen by a greater degree than what we've seen in the United States. So that's why, you know, we do like international at 20%. And then the other 30, we actually split between Canada and the U.S. Right. So we think that the return profile between Canada and the U.S. is fairly similar over the course of the next 12 months.
Now, Philip, all that's going on politically here in Alberta, no pipeline. You know, it's and you're in Toronto, we're in Calgary, a little bit different here. The sentiment here is completely different than in Toronto. Why so much money in Canada when you can put more in the U.S. if that's the growth engine of the world so far?
Well, a growth engine of the world, but in a year that's coming where, you know, growth is going to be hard to come by, right? And so Canada looks similar to the United States from a valuation perspective, or the opportunity in valuation, meaning Canada is much cheaper than the U.S.
Right.
By about one standard deviation. So, you know, it's only this cheap or cheaper, you know, we're looking at 15% of the time. And so that, now there are reasons why Canada is cheap. Energy policy is one of those reasons. But, you know, there are a number of companies within the TSX, perhaps not the TSX itself, but within the TSX that are global in nature, that are very well positioned, diversified around the world, that can benefit if we start to see global growth move a little bit higher. And they're trading at significant discounts to their U.S. or global peers, and at the same time are also paying attractive dividends. So that's why we would say, you know, we would put Canada in terms of the return profile similar to that of the United States over the coming 12 months. But again, it's only 15% of the portfolio being each. So we're not, certainly not overweight Canada. We don't have a disproportionate weighting to Canada. Let's look at the U.S. at 15%, where we were, say, a couple of years ago, that would have looked like 35%. So we think the opportunity set in the United States is much more similar to what we see in Canada, and a little less than what we would see in the international markets.
We have about a minute left. What are your rate of return expectations over the next 12 months in this kind of a portfolio? 50% equity, 50% fixed income.
Over the course of the next 12 months, my expectation would be somewhere in the low single-digit range, call it somewhere between, say, 3 and 5%.
And you're saying that fixed income and equities, in your opinion, likely doing about the same?
Exactly. So a diversified fixed income portfolio that would include high yield, would include some emerging market debt. I would look at both returning. You know, the base case would be somewhere between that 2 to 5%, 3 to 5% range.
Okay.
That's a big change for people. We've been accustomed to 10% rates of return in the stock market plus, and now you're going to be looking at a portfolio potentially getting you to 3 to 5%. So be aware. This is a big change. If this pans out the way that this base case looks, it's going to surprise a lot of people and disappoint a lot of people, because this year was a good year. So 2020 may not be as high of a year in return as it was. So just be aware of that. You know, Philip, this is great. We love having you on the show every time. Going to bring you back again for our next quarterly conversation. And thank you for your feedback.
Happy to do it, gentlemen. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right, before we sign off very quickly, our upcoming seminar.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the five pillars, this type of volatility, how to profit and protect on Tuesday, November 19th, 7 p.m. at the Four Points Sheraton Hotel in West Calgary. You need to reserve your seat. So give us a call, 966-8400. That's 966-8400, or you can register online at morethanmoneyradio.com.
Are you messing up your kids by trying to help them? And what are the unintended consequences? We're going to talk about that on the next segment. Stick around for that. You're on 770 CHQR and More Than Money.